As you see at the top of the page, this subject that we're talking about is very current. It was suggested for one of our class studies by someone, and so it is a good suggestion, and that's why we're picking it up tonight. Recently, a young woman diagnosed with incurable brain cancer chose to take her own life. She went to Oregon, where it is legal to do that. A lot of people think that that was heroic, that it was good and right, nothing improper in it. Our question is it right or is it wrong? When you face suffering, when you face financial ruin, when you face that which brings shame and humiliation in your life, when there are circumstances in life that fill people with depression and despair, is suicide an option for those who serve God? That's what we're looking at in our study tonight. We're going to begin in Genesis chapter 9. I've put verses on the sheet that, at least in my thinking, logically address the question. It may be that you have others that I've not included on the lesson, and please feel free to mention those in the course of the class. I believe these do address the issue, and that's why we're looking at them. Genesis chapter 9, let's start in verse 3. Every moving thing that is alive shall be food for you. I give all to you as I gave the green plant. Only you shall not eat flesh with its life, that is, its blood. Surely I will require your lifeblood. From every beast I will require it. And from every man's brother, I will require the life of man. Whoever sheds man's blood, by man his blood shall be shed, for in the image of God he made man. Clearly, God here, before even the law of Moses, puts a high value on human life. So much so that the taking of human life results in the judgment of death. Now, there's a reason given in this text as to why human life is placed in such high value. What is the reason in the text?
The image of God.
Man's in the image of God. You see that in the sixth verse, in the middle of the verse, for in the image of God he made man. We remember that in Genesis 1, in the account of creation, it wasn't until the sixth day, and this is after the fowl had been created, the birds of the sky, and after the animals had been created, that it said only of the man and the woman that they're made in the image of God. So of all the multiplied thousands of kinds in the world, only humans are said to be made in the image of God. The image of God has more to do with than the fact that we walk upright, that we use our hands. It has to do with the inner part of man, what we call the spirit or the soul, the capacity of man to even conceive of God and to make moral decisions, to accumulate knowledge. This is something that is unique to humans, not found in the animal kingdom. There's a part of man that survives death. In fact, death is the separation of the soul and the body, and resurrection is the uniting of the soul and the body. And so it's that inner man, the Bible talks about that inner man, that is made in the image of God. Humanist, evolutionist, atheist, people in our society do not understand or believe this, and yet it's critical to our proper evaluation of the dignity of human life. in this text, it says, I'll require your life blood. From every beast I will require it. So that answers our question 1B. If an animal kills a human, the animal is to be killed. Same reason. For in the image of God, he made man. You may wonder why we didn't start a study like this in Exodus chapter 20 with the commandment, you shall not kill or you shall not murder. Exodus 20, the first four commands of the Ten Commandments grow out of love and respect for God. Love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength. The last six have to do with love of neighbor. Jesus said on these two commandments, love God and love your neighbor, hang all the law and the prophets. So you shall not kill in Exodus 20. If I believed in suicide and you quoted Exodus chapter 20, you shall not kill, I might say, I agree with you. I don't have the right to take another's life. And that's really what's in view in Exodus chapter 20, the taking of another human being's life. You'll note we don't have Exodus 20 on the lesson tonight. We're approaching it from another standpoint. What is it about that commandment in Exodus 20 and this one in Genesis that has nothing to do with one human being necessarily having malice for another? An animal kills a human, and God requires his lifeblood. For what reason? For in the image of God he made man. This is the reason given in the text. So we ask question 1C. The reason God forbade taking another's life is that it is not your own life. True or false? False. That's the way we might reason. That's the way the people you work with might reason. The people in society might reason. I agree it's wrong to murder, but this is my life. And it's wrong because if I kill you because I'm taking your life. That's not the reason given in the text. The reason given is that man is made in the image of God. So if we just stay with the text, it's the dignity of human life that becomes the focus. In this text that we've read, was it wrong to kill animals for food? It was not wrong to kill animals for food. You immediately see a difference in animals and man. Animals could be killed and eaten. Man could not. Was it because man doesn't taste very good or just repulsive? No. It's because he's made in the image of God is the reason. So just keep coming back to this text. We ask this question. Would it be wrong to kill a horse that broke his leg? No, it wouldn't. If not, what is the difference in killing a man who lost his legs? Let's say a man went to war, or a man was working in a mine, and an explosive went off and blew his legs off. If you can kill a horse because it's no longer productive when it breaks its leg, can you kill a man who now may become dependent on his wife or family or society because he lost his legs? And if not, why not? What's the difference?
Genesis
1. Man's made in the image of God. That's what we have right here in Genesis 9. That's the difference. Okay, so
you may approach this. I have a question. Back in World War I, when you're a pilot and you're being shot down and they don't have a jet or seats, but your plane's on fire, they're given a pistol and it's whether you can burn to death or you're going to crash and die. And my question to that is, what about in that example? You take your own life so you don't burn to death and you're going to die either way, so it's inevitable. I mean, is that something you're going to approach tonight?
Okay, David's question is, in the pilot, if you're a pilot in World War II and you know your plane's going down, you're going to die, you've got a pistol, is it okay to shoot yourself and take your own life? We'll be looking in the course of our lesson, I think, at some things that deal with those kind of scenarios. It's a good question. Okay, any other comments on Genesis 9 before we go to Exodus 21? All right, look at Exodus chapter 21. Verse 28. If an ox gores a man or woman to death, the ox surely shall surely be stoned, and his flesh shall not be eaten, but the owner of the ox shall go unpunished. If, however, an ox was previously in the habit of goring, and its owner had been warned, or has been warned, yet he does not confine it, and it kills a man or woman, the ox shall be stoned, and its owner also shall be put to death. So that answers our question 2A. What would be done with an ox that killed a human? That ox was to be put to death. Because the ox had malice, because the ox set out with premeditation to kill a man, or is it because man is made in the image of God, the sanctity of human life? Question 2B, what was to be done with the owner of that ox if he knew his ox was, now if you have the digital copy, it said a great to human life, and I guess you figured out it meant a threat. The printed copy has a threat to human life. If you knew that your ox was a threat to human life, what was your responsibility? What? Put it down, be sure and confine it, something. Neglect to do that, out of maybe disregard for human life, would cause the owner of the ox also to suffer the punishment of death. And so the owner of the ox, he might love his ox, he might be good to plow with, but if he threatens human life, you better not neglect confining or whatever you've got to do with that ox. So we ask again the question, based on Genesis 9, 1 through 6, what is the reason for such severe penalty? Is the reason stated in this text? No, it isn't. So you'll have to go elsewhere to figure out, why did God make this kind of law? Genesis 9, we see a distinction in the killing of animals and the killing of man. And a reason was given. Because man is in the image of God. If you know of another reason for this law, you tell me what it is. I know of no other foundation to explain why this kind of law was given other than the sanctity and dignity of human life. Let's go to Matthew chapter 22. In verse 36, a lawyer asked Jesus Christ, "Teacher, what is the great commandment in the law?" He said to him, "You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, and with all your soul, and with all your mind. This is the great and foremost commandment. The second is like it, you shall love your neighbor as yourself. On these two commandments depend the whole law and the prophets." On our sheet, we ask a question. What are the two parts to the greatest commandment? There's two, what?
Love neighbor and love self.
Love neighbor and love self, right? Love your neighbor as yourself. He doesn't command love of self. It's assumed, it's axiomatic that you love yourself. If you're familiar with Paul's statement in Ephesians 5, what is the proof that we love ourselves? He discusses this very concept in Ephesians 5. Sir?
Imitators of God?
No. No, that's, we ought to imitate God. There's no question about that. But a fellow that doesn't even believe in God shows that he loves himself. Look at Ephesians chapter 5. Verse 29. In that text, what is the evidence that Paul appeals to that men love themselves? Ma'am? They take care of themselves. That's right. He said, no one ever hated his own flesh. Now you'll note back up in the 28th verse, husbands ought to love their wives as their own body. He who loves his wife loves himself. For no one ever hated his own flesh, but nourishes. The word nourish means to provide what's necessary for life. And that may not only be physical life, but emotional life. And cherishes it. What does the word cherish mean? Whole value, to prize. It's something important to you. So he nourishes and cherishes it. That's the evidence of love of self. And so in the second greatest commandment, you love your neighbor as you love yourself. You want to help provide, care for, nourish, and you ought to value, esteem your neighbor. The love of these two commandments in Matthew 22, the two greatest commandments, are they commanding, either one of these commandments commanding emotion, emotional love? No. It's an attitude based on esteem. You love God more than anything or anyone, and so he says, with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength, because there is no comparison of any other being, any other thing in the entire universe like God. He is the Creator. He is eternal. His wisdom is infinite. His power cannot be measured. And so you love him, you esteem him, and care about his honor and dignity more than anything else in the universe. And then love of neighbor is also based on esteem. And in Matthew 5, when Jesus is preaching about the character of the citizens of the kingdom of heaven, he talks about the law of murder. You've heard that it was said, you shall not murder. But then he talked about the fact that you're not to do what toward your fellow man? Do you remember? Not to... Anybody remember?
Not to
curse. All right, not to curse him. Look at Matthew 5. Verse 22. But I say to you that everyone who is angry with his brother shall be guilty before the court. And everyone who says to his brother, you good for nothing, shall be guilty before the Supreme Court. Whoever says you fool shall be guilty enough to go into the fiery hell. When a person talks about their neighbor that way, what does that say about their esteem of their neighbor?
Not very high.
Not very high. You fool, you're worth nothing. That certainly opens the door to murder. Contemptuous anger. Not just anger, but contemptuous anger. Opens the door for murder. And so over here, love your neighbor as yourself is based on an esteem of neighbor. But I've got this faithful dog. He bites the burglars. He's my friend. He sleeps with me in bed. Not mine, but a lot of people do. He's been with me for 15 years. I love my dog. Now, why should I love somebody I don't even know more than this faithful dog?
People are made in the image of God.
That's it. A human's made in the image of God. That's the difference, isn't it? Is it because this other person has done something for you? Because you like them? Has nothing to do with that. If we lose this concept, I don't know how we're going to keep that second greatest commandment. Love your neighbor as yourself. Okay, so here's our question. If love yourself allows one to take his own life in the face of suffering, like this woman that we see in the news, or humiliation, we'll see that at the end of our lesson today, that people did that, or loss of productivity, just no longer good for society, I can't do anything anymore. Would love your neighbor also allow you to take one's neighbor's life in those circumstances? In other words, here's your neighbor. Your neighbor is suffering. Your neighbor has made a tragic, tragic mistake in their lives. They're fallen from honor and dignity, and they're full of shame, or maybe they're full of depression. And maybe something's happened where they can no longer be a productive husband or father or citizen. Would love of neighbor allow you to take their life? But I said, yeah, but if they okay it, what if they don't okay it? Even without their permission. Here's a little baby that's born without arms and legs. How productive in society? Can I make the decision? Because if I love myself, I can take my life. Love your neighbors yourself, so can I take the baby's life? If not, why not? Maybe the baby's born with some mental impairment. Let's say you get in a wreck and you get in a coma. It's easy to talk about this academically, but you get in a wreck and you get in a coma. Doctors say they don't know if you'll ever be able to function again. If it is, it's going to be in limited capacity. Do you want somebody, because of their love for you, to make a decision to take your life? And if love of self allows it, why not love of neighbor allow it? Look at Ephesians 5. Here in chapter 5, in verse, that should be 28 and 29 on the sheet. I got 29 and 29. That doesn't make much sense, does it? 28 and 29. Husbands ought to love their own wives as their own bodies. He who loves his own wife loves himself. All right, so a man has to love his wife as himself. If love of self permits taking one's life in the face of suffering or humiliation or loss of productivity, would it not allow a man to take his wife's life in the face of suffering or humiliation or loss of productivity? If not, why not? Yes, sir.
I hate to stop you, but living wills now, people say, like, I sign in mine where if I get Alzheimer's, maybe it's in my family, or dementia or something like that, that I don't want a food stuck down a tube and given to me. Is that killing yourself?
In my opinion, no, John. You're not killing yourself. You let nature take its course. There's a difference in, you know you're going to die, and you're not trying to force yourself to live, versus I'm going to end it quicker and do something to end my life.
But when you left that coma thing, it left me
kind of hanging. I mentioned the coma thing because of others, without your will or permission, deciding, I love you, I'm going to decide to take your life. Many of you in this audience, most everybody in this audience, knew Jim Porterfield. Jim Porterfield got in a wreck. He was in a coma, I think it was 51 or 2 days. They didn't know if he'd come out of it. And when he came out of it, they didn't know if he'd be able to function in life. There's an example. So suppose someone decides, I love you, Jim, so we're going to take your life. Is that allowed by the law of love your neighbor as yourself? Betty?
Well, the ones I think of, like John was talking about, is keeping you alive by artificial means, even though if you were living naturally, you wouldn't be here.
Okay. Betty's comment was, her thinking is that the kind of thing that people do sometimes is try to keep you alive by artificial means. And I agree, that's right. And so that's a choice you have to make. But there comes a time in people's lives, especially if they're Christians, they're ready to go home. And they're not interested in people trying to keep them alive. Why do we try to keep them alive? For us. For us. Sally?
When my mother was dying, they told us that her kidneys were failing. And they wanted to know if we wanted to do dialysis. And we said, no. She's only going to be alive, you know, several more days. And they said, no, that's not what she would want.
Okay.
And I think we have to not only take, the most important thing is what God says, but we also have to take into consideration what the person would do if they could make their own decisions.
What if the person would say, if I could, I'd kill myself? But that's a good consideration. We'd certainly have to consider what the person would do. And if they would not want to be kept alive by artificial means, as Sally has pointed out, then we ought to respect that. Okay. Look at Romans 13:10. When Paul is discussing this second greatest commandment, as you see in verse 9, you shall love your neighbor as yourself. He expands on its meaning. He said, love does no wrong. Your version may say no ill or no harm to a neighbor. That's why you do not commit adultery. You do not murder. What about committing adultery? What if the other person agrees to commit adultery? Why do you not commit adultery? Okay, you're harming them. So, well, because God said not to. That's true, but what he is pointing out is that hurts them. And this law forbids harming others, even if they agree. Even if they're a willing participant. And so, adultery, murder, stealing, coveting, and he said if there's any other commandment. So it would include like bearing false witness against someone. Okay, so love does no wrong to a neighbor. So that answers our question 3D. Now, for thought on our next page. Is it wrong or harmful to your neighbor? Let me ask you this. Is your wife your neighbor?
Yes.
Are your children your neighbors? Yes. Yes. Are your brethren your neighbors? Any human being is your neighbor, right? All right, so here's the question. If you commit suicide, is it harmful to send a message that self-ease is a primary consideration? It's about me and relieving my pain and suffering. Is that a good message to send? Is that helpful to your children? if they see that in a mother or father, and because the mother and father, let's say, face bankruptcy, loss of job, can't provide, that's hard on a man who's been providing for his family. So dad commits suicide, I'm out of the way now. I had a $500,000 life insurance policy. Of course, it won't pay in suicide anyway, usually. But let's suppose that happens. So now that boy gets to be 25. Something happens in his life. What kind of messages he learned from his father? You don't face difficulty. You get out of it. Whether it be humiliation or pain or suffering or whatever that may be. Is that good or harmful message to send to children, to a mate, to brethren? Is that a good message or a bad message? Who are some of the people right here at Humble who you've learned so much from about facing life difficulties? They're not here anymore. Who are some of them? Huh? Toy Robinson. You learn anything from Toy? You learn anything from Sister Wilbur? Came to church suffering with shingles, lost her husband, lost her sons. Learn anything from those folks? Glenn Bogues, who's suffering now. Learn anything from those kind of people? I don't know about you, I do. And it's not just take the easy way out. Is that good for me? Is that good for you? Secondly, is it wrong or harmful if it creates financial, psychological, or spiritual burdens for others? I don't know what it does to a family, to a child, to a mate, if their mate commits adultery or the mother, father commits suicide. I don't know what kind of psychological trauma that must cause. Does it cause the children or the mate that's left to think this was my fault? Or is there something I could have done to prevent it? Are there lasting harmful effects? You'll have to talk to somebody that knows more about that than I do. What about the financial burdens that it causes? And so, yes, you're through. You're out of it. You're suffering. You're humiliation or whatever. You're done. But what about the people you leave behind? And then, what if suicide averts the development of character that could make you of service? Well, I tell you, I got another typo here. That could make you of service. You think of anybody in the Bible that we're indebted to because of their suffering that came to serve others? Huh? Paul? Jesus? What's the greatest example of suffering that for generations since people have found strength and comfort in?
Job.
Even in the book of James, he's talking to those Christians. You know the sufferings of Job. You've mentioned these others. Paul talked about when he was facing death in 2 Timothy, about God delivering him from the lions. Where did he read anything about that? Facing death with courage. Know any Old Testament stories like that? About Daniel? If you're going to be thrown into a den of lions, that's going to be a fun way to die, isn't it? Attacking you, biting you, crushing your bones. Maybe Daniel should have asked for some poison. Say, I'll take care of this real quick. Or jump into the pit, head down, and break his neck or something. And so what if you rob other people of that? We would be robbed of the life of the benefits of service of these people that we're talking about had they taken their lives. robs of example of faith in the face of difficulty. So love your neighbor means you do not do them wrong. What is going to be the impact of my decision on my wife, my children, my family, my brethren, whoever it may be? Is this a valid consideration? If you don't think so, tell me. It looks like a valid consideration to me.
Yeah. There's only one reason that suicide is right, and that's John 16:13.
What is that?
It says, greater love has no other than this, than one lay down his life for his friends.
That's suicide?
Well, I mean, not suicide, but taking your own life, I should say.
Jesus took his own life? John 16:13 is a good passage. I mean, 15. One laid down his life for his friend, but did Jesus take his own life? No. Would it have been an easier way out?
Yes.
Knowing the cross, I don't know if there was a more painful, excruciating death than the cross. Did he know what he was getting ready to go through? Could he have ended it?
Yes.
Before the cross? Wouldn't he have still died? He knew what was coming. He laid down his life. He let it happen. And that's true. As David said, that's great love. But he didn't commit suicide. That would have been a lot easier way out. We have that at the end of our lesson, Jesus. In Philippians 3, verse 17 through 19, he said, brethren, join in following my example and observe those who walk according to the pattern you have in us. So here are examples to be followed. But look at the next verse. For many walk, of whom I've often told you, and now I tell you even weeping, that they're enemies of the cross of Christ, whose end is destruction, whose God is their appetite, and whose glory is in their shame, who set their mind on earthly things. Here's an example not to be followed. And you'll see that among supposedly God's people today. Examples to be followed, examples not to be followed. Look at 1 Corinthians chapter 10. Verse 6. Now these things happen as examples for us. We sometimes define the word example as a model to be followed. Sometimes it's a model, all right, but it's a model not to be followed. Examples are to be considered in ascertaining the will of God. They're really accounts of action. It's what they are. What do they say about the will of God? I don't know. I have to gather all the facts. Here are some examples. He says, so that we would not crave after evil things, as they also crave. So here are examples telling you don't follow in their steps. And so look down at verse 11. Now these things happened to them as an example, and they were, not only did it happen, but they were written. The Holy Spirit had to choose what to put in this book. So he chose some examples. He said, these are written for our instruction. So what I've done in the last part of the lesson is take some examples that the Holy Spirit has chosen to have written down. Are they for our instruction? Is this a valid approach to say, here are examples that I can learn from, either to follow or not to follow, make my choice as to whether or not I want to do one or the other. We're all familiar with the story of Job. Turn back to the book of Job, chapter 3. When you start out the story of Job, what do you see, first of all, about Job in verse 1 of Job 1? He's blameless and upright. He's a man that fears God. He's a man of blameless character. What do you see about Job in verse 2? It's something that people prize even today?
Large family.
Large family, had a big family. What about verse 3? He was wealthy. He had everything needful to enjoy life and far beyond. He was wealthy. As you read Job further, you'll find he was also highly esteemed in the community. Evidently, people came to him for counsel. He helped people who were in need. He defended those who were oppressed. He was a man that was renowned for his character, for his alms, for his righteousness, and highly esteemed. So that's how we start out the story of Job. And then, of course, you know what happened. He lost all of his family. He lost his servants. He lost all of his possessions. As bad as that is, he still had the one thing that has become a god today. If you watch the ads on TV for medicines, for exercise, for whatever it may be, what is held out to be the most important thing you have? Your health. That's our society. Your health. He lost that. And there were no pills, and there was no exercise, there was no doctor, and there were no surgeries he could go through to restore his health. He lost his health. How long did this go on? I do not know. Was it months? I don't know. Time enough for his three friends to hear about it and come and join him, talk to him about it. Went on and on. He talks about it in the book. Lost all of that. Chapter 3, verse 11. Here's the question he keeps asking. Why did I not die at birth? God, why am I living? Couldn't he change that? Could he? Sure. He could have, couldn't he? Family's gone except for your wife, and she's told you to curse God and die. Your health's gone. Your money's gone. Your reputation's gone. Why live? He wants to know that too. But oh, would we be at a loss if it weren't for the story of Job? Was suicide an option? You've got this whole book. You can go all the way to the end of the book of Job. You've got 42 chapters. Most of you in this class have studied the book of Job. Was suicide ever an option with this man? Never. So you have examples to follow. We're going to look at some others, but our time is up.